Blimey. This is one out of a jam jar you got here.
And two, I think, every morning. The House of Mystery contains demons, angels, elementals, magicians, wizards, apparitions, adult language, and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not enter the House of Mystery.
All right, then. On with the show.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the House of Mystery, the John Constantine and Friends podcast. This is the very first show, the inaugural show, and I'm Michael Flores, your host, and in the studio with me to celebrate the festivities, our fellow podcasting compatriots and Constantine fans, Paul, hello.
Magic and cigarettes.
David, hello.
Hello, hello.
Greg, hello.
How's it going, everybody?
All right. And if the name didn't give it away, this is Rain Man Digital's first official Constantine fan show that will be added right to the stable of DC on RMD shows that we do almost on a daily basis during television season. And in this show, we're going to get into a wide array of discussions centered around the Rogue, chain-smoking mage, Hellblazer storylines, ongoing themes used within Constantine's stories, Justice League Dark stuff. If you can imagine it, we are going to be getting into it. It's an endless well of information. If you're a Constantine fan, which you probably are if you're pushed play and you're listening, you know this to be true. There are so many things, decades of stories that are out there that you can just read and dissect. And the beautiful thing about this show that I'm going to be looking forward to, Paul, is that some of these titles I haven't read since the 90s. So now there's an excuse for me to be a big old Constantine nerd and just go back and start rereading those old titles. That's the best thing about doing podcasts. Have you noticed that, Paul? Now yeah. That you, because you're kind of new to the network.
So similarly, a lot of these stories I haven't read. That's all. So I get to read them now.
You're a new 52 Constantine fan. Is that fair to say?
I mean, yes, I liked his run in the New 52, but the New 52 isn't like what made me like him. I had, you know, an established appreciation, yeah, which is why I gave the New 52 run a shot.
Yeah.
Just to clear that up so I don't sound like some fucking idiot.
Oh, he's a New 52 fanboy. Stop. Unsubscribe. Dave, what about you? You are a big Constantine fan. I know you're deepest geeked hard on stems mostly from Swamp Thing. That's what you mostly have a hard on for.
Oh yeah.
But you know, Constantine got his start in Swamp Thing. Is that how you got into him in the first place?
Yeah, that's how I first got introduced to the character, and I think it was Saga of the Swamp Thing number 37.
Oh, you're such a nerd. You know, number 37, page 7 in Petal 3. He made his first appearance.
Ever since his run on Vertigo, that's how I liked him. And that's partially why, you know, I'm, especially with those Vertigo characters, I'm very protective of those Vertigo characters.
Oh yeah, so am I. What about you, Greg, briefly? Big fan of Constantine, early years or late years or both?
I read the early years. I never read any of the newer stuff.
Yeah.
I got into when I worked at Atomic Comics, mm-hmm, and then movie, TV show, and then whenever he makes an appearance on any of the regular TV shows.
Yeah, and I'm kind of between you, Greg, and Paul when it comes to what I read, because I read everything in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s and late 2000s. Obviously, I didn't read them in the 80s because I wasn't allowed to. I think I was 4. And obviously, if my mom would have had to purchase them for me, and she would have been, you know, terrible parent if she's spoon feeding me Constantine Vertigo titles.
Mijo, you've read this. You have to go say 5 Hail Marys and 6 Our Lord's Prayers.
I read it later in life. I want to say late 90s is when I got into the Vertical run. And then I went back once. I was like, what the hell is this? When did it start? And of course, the world is not like it is today. You can't simply go on Amazon and find yourself volume 1. You have to go to CD comic book shops and find, you know, in their greasy tubs, comic issues. So that's how I had to piecemeal my collection together to end up reading. I believe it was Jamie Delano is the one who wrote the original 80s run for DC. So I read those later in life. Then I read the 90s. I'm not a big Garth Ennis fan, but he did a great job between what was it? Issues 41 and 83, I believe. And then he took over again in between 129 and 133 for a small run. I read everything. Enough said when it comes to the early years. Now, I'm ashamed of myself because I did not read any of the new 52 Constantine because I was being a Vertigo homo. I was like, you know what? No, it's not Constantine if it's not on a mature title. It can't be. And Paul, of all people, sold me on going back and reading the final series before Rebirth took over and abolished that run.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I gave it to you. What it was like 14 issues total.
Yeah. And they were pretty good. They were pretty good. And I feel ashamed of myself for not reading them. But now I am now making a commitment to go back and read the new 52 run. Now, that being said, I did read the Justice League Dark run and the
new 52 Justice League Dark or the Rebirth?
No, the new 52 Justice League Dark is without a doubt the only Constantine reading material I read after new 52 started. And that's because I was just intrigued. You know, you had Zatanna, Xanadu, Deadman, who I adore. And I was like, okay, this is something new and fresh. I can get behind this. And for the most part, that series was digestible. There were moments that I kind of cringed. There were some very naive moments. And when you're used to reading things in the earlier years of Constantine, it just kind of made you roll your eyes.
It rolls your eyes, yeah.
But there were moments. I want to say the opening 8 issues were pretty strong, and then it kind of lost itself somewhere for a while, and then it picked back up again after issue like 25, 26. And that's how I feel about the 2016 Rebirth of Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
I read it because I was greedy. You know, I needed something, and I didn't give the Constantine titles a chance, but this one was like, you know what? It's a Rebirth. They promised to give us the old style Constantine. I'm going to give it a shot. And I was disappointed for the first 12 issues. And then the guy that was, what was his name? I believe it was...
you stuck through 12 issues?
Yes. Simon Oliver wrote it.
I think I did like the first issue, maybe the first two, and I was over it.
Yeah, I wanted to like it. I couldn't get into it. I feel like it was not Constantine. It was just off because there were moments that made you think, okay, Simon Oliver gets it. Yeah, he understands Constantine. But then at the same time, I feel like he was trying very hard not to be a fanboy of the earlier years. And that happens sometimes when you're dealing with those iconic character titles. You have those writers who take a step back and say, well, what am I going to do differently? I can't regurgitate what's been done. This is a character that's been around for 30 years. How am I going to leave my mark? What am I going to do? Well, I'm going to stay true to the character, but I'm going to do something completely different at the same time. And that's what I felt Simon Oliver was trying to do. Now, he got fired.
Yes.
And another writer came in, Tim Seeley, I want to say issue 13, and he was specifically hired to end the series. They gave him, I believe, a year to wrap up the show or wrap up the title. His run was good. I enjoyed it. He understood Constantine, understood Hellblazer as a title, and I was so fucking disappointed when it ended because I didn't know Tim Seeley was specifically hired to end it until he tweeted it out and said, hey, guys, it's over. I'm like, what? It was just getting good, dude.
He's kind of a jack of all trades. Like,
are you familiar with his work?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't write any specific person like flawlessly, mm-hmm. but he can write so many different characters. Like, you know, you really appreciated his run with they called that one Hellblazer, but yeah, know, on Constantine, he did a long run on Nightwing with, you know, Dick Grayson, and I think he's done some Batman.
So he has he dips his talents in different playgrounds, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's good at doing it because I haven't read any of his work besides his Rebirth Hellblazer title.
Well, just like what you were saying about being tough, because as a writer, you have to understand the character and not be a fanboy. Tim Seeley's run, like when he did Nightwing and Batman, he understood the concepts of the character,
right,
but he knew how to actually make them, give them interesting stories to kind of further on their character. development.
Something beyond giving them a wedding and then taking away the wedding.
Exactly. And then, or like in regards to Constantine, Constantine's more than just basically standing there, smoking a cigarette, say something rude in British slang. Yeah, and that's what the other writer fanboyed out of.
It was
the
Simon imagery. Oliver.
Yeah, Simon Oliver's fanboyed.
I would agree with that.
On the imagery of Constantine.
I would agree with that. That's exactly what he did. It felt like he had an understanding, but it wasn't an understanding from an intellectual side. It was an understanding from a fanboy side.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this is what I would like to see him do. Smoke a cigarette, you know, have some sexual relations randomly with this lady here, and that's it. But that's why I appreciated what Tim Seeley did by how he wrapped it up and kind of fixed the problems, because he brought it back to the mysticism of Hellblazer. It wasn't just the run-of-the-mill procedural elements of Constantine. It was going way back into, you know, mysticism and mythology, which in my opinion is some of my favorite Hellblazer storylines, are the ones where they dig deep into mythology.
Yes.
It's not just the Christian lore or Christian mysticism, which is kind of the go-to for a lot of people. When they think Constantine, they think hell and demons, but Constantine is so much more than just Judeo-Christian mysticism.
Yeah. When they started actually talking about like Indian religion, like the Vishanti and some Asian cultures and stuff like that, and start mixing it all together,
that's when it gets fun.
It's when it gets fun, because Hellblazer to me, the early days was kind of like, it basically said all religions are all true. They just mingle together.
Yeah.
We just don't understand how it mingles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with a character, and I think this is why Constantine as a character has managed to stand the test of time without ever really being mainstream. And I know there's probably Constantine fans that want to throw things at me now for saying that, because a lot of people say, no, he is mainstream, but he's not Superman. He's not Batman. He's not Aquaman. He's not Wonder Woman. Those are the names that people think of, regular people, when you hear DC. You don't think of John Constantine. You don't think of a lot of his crew. You don't think of Deadman. You don't think of Zatanna. You just don't.
Well, they're those characters that are those, I don't want to say they're kind of those characters you can just kind of put in wherever in the DC universe and
right.
those kind of fit. But that's essentially what they are. I mean, that's like, you know, because you have across cartoons and comics, you have Deadman popping up here and there with Batman and everybody else. And, you know, same with Zatanna, like she just pops in and out. So,
I mean, you could theoretically, you know, you could do that with Batman or Wonder Woman or Superman too, because they're good characters. So you can fit them in wherever you want to or wherever you need them. You know, I think the big takeaway here is the fact that all of these, you know, these magical, mystical characters, Deadman, Constantine, Zatanna, they have to pop up in other places because they usually don't get enough attention to have their own movie or their own series. Yeah.
And also, like, the stories tied to them, I don't want to say are too mature for those characters, but like the stories and the way that those characters kind of deal with the world is far different than, of course, before Wonder Woman now. But if you read Wonder Woman now, it's basically she could fit into Justice League Dark.
Everything has changed. But I definitely take your meaning.
Yeah.
80s, 90s, things were very different.
Like, comics
were a little more naive. The mainstream comics were a little more naive.
You would never see Superman in a Hellblazer storyline, because that would just make a person's head explode.
Yeah, you would never have Constantine take out the entire Justice League team like he did in Tim Seeley's run.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fucking awesome.
You guys talk about like religion, but I really like the aspect or the concept of like magic at a cost.
Oh yeah.
Where like, you know, magic is a tiger. You're not going to work with a tiger without taming it first. However, magic can't be tamed.
Right. And that's going right back to what I was saying is the staying power of Constantine. That's the reason behind it, because they are complicated stories filled with so much substance. And the writers that tackled Constantine in the early years are writers that are known for really digging in deep into relevant social issues. And a lot of people don't realize that even the Hellblazer titles were doing that. That's what they were doing. They were blazing trails, and that's part of the staying power of Constantine. That's why he's managed to have this thin, secretive line of of success throughout the last 30 some years because of that. And again, going right back to mythology and mysticism is such a big part of Constantine's staying power as well. It's interesting. It has that intriguing aspect. It's the reason why so many writers now recently are going back and giving mythological backstories to some of our characters, like Wonder Woman in The Witching Hour, like Batman in Metal. It's because it's intriguing. It's fucking cool. Why do you think we all love Indiana Jones?
Well, if you notice,
Nazis.
besides that, but if you actually look at the current run,
are you saying you like Nazis?
No, I like to see them get defeated.
Okay, yeah. All right.
But if you notice in a lot of the recent comic books, when characters like Constantine, or even in Batman's Metal, the most epic thing in Batman Metal that I got giddy over, Sandman showing up.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden you turn the page, it's Sandman. What the hell? And Sandman's just standing there talking to Batman.
Oh, what's up, Bruce?
And like, it automatically, just for you as the comic book reader, goes, holy crap, these guys are super powerful now. Because they're dealing with characters like Constantine.
A whole different ballgame.
It's a whole different ballgame now.
Well, yeah. And I think you can attribute all this to when they abolished the comics code. And
You're going way back time machine.
Yeah, way back. And because that's why they had Vertigo. That's why they had these, you know, mature imprints so they could do these storylines with these characters. But then when DC finally said, okay, you know what? We're getting our ass kicked. We really should probably get rid of this comics code thing and just do the rating system ourselves.
Yeah.
That opened the door for them to be like, well, what if we brought in Constantine over into Batman now? What if we did this? What if we did that? And I think one of the, to go along with Constantine's staying power, is that he's that character that he understands the repercussions more so than anybody if, you know, this demon or this whatever is allowed to succeed or, you know, come to, you know, this curse, you know, this prophecy's come to pass, where he's like, well, we can still defeat it. And he's like, no, you fucking can't. Just fucking listen to me and let me do my job.
Yeah. And that goes back to consequence, you know, like everything has a cost. In reality, everything we do as a society, what happens? There's consequence to every single decision. And that's another reason why Constantine's stories have resonated for so long. Because it isn't just, hey, I have superpower. Ha 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 ha. I could defeat everybody and there's no ramifications. No, every time he chooses to do something to help people, there's a risk factor. There's a risk to his own humanity. There's a risk to others most of the time. It's an intriguing way to write, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, a superhero story. And honestly, there are lots of other characters you can point to in both Marvel and DC and say, well, they're kind of similar to Constantine. But I would argue that. I would argue that Constantine is 100% unique and everything else has been a bit of a copycat routine. But none of them even come close to the amount of substance and relevance that is a part of Constantine's overall journey of the 30 plus years. And we're going to get into all of that. We have tons of discussions planned for this next year. I already have 18 shows planned. Everything's mapped out and we're going to delve into all of those aspects, themes of Constantine, social commentary. And then of course, you know, some fun things as well. The movie, which what were your thoughts on the Keanu Reeves Constantine movie? Let's start with David. I want to give some of our, because David, I don't know if you're tuned in to the Constantine fandom as much as I am, but that's a fucking hot button.
It is
topic because you have people who are 100% Keanu Reeves is awesome as Constantine, and then you have the other side. It's like, fuck that guy.
Yep.
Fuck him and that movie. Where do you stand?
I actually stand right in the middle. I understand that basically people don't like it because it is not
the safest spot to stand.
Not really. Because I've been in that debate about Keanu Reeves' Constantine, and I've told people there are good things about it.
There is.
And then like people would like tell me like just like immediately want to rip me apart because I understand Keanu Reeves, that rendition of Constantine is nothing like in the comic books.
Okay, so what did you like about it? Let's start there, because I'm going to dissect it so far. I'm going to pull back this onion so far back that you won't be standing in the middle any longer when I'm done.
The one thing I really liked about it was the mythos around him. Yeah. Like, they get the fact, the whole idea of Constantine was he, the one thing about John is he,
oh, first name basis.
Like, it's like, it's like you, he understands that he had to pay a price, right?
Right.
So everyone points out the cancer thing on the, in the storyline was stupid. I actually said, no, if they did that to John, that would make sense.
Yeah.
I could see that happening to John, to Constantine.
Okay. What about Keanu's portrayal?
Keanu's portrayal, I thought, was very fanboy like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what fanboys think John Constantine is. Moody, right. Angry.
Was he
hates emo? Everybody.
He's emo. But he is kind of a little emo at times, let's be honest.
And yeah, Constantine is. Yeah. But when you put the substance behind why he's that way,
there you go.
Then it makes sense.
Yep.
Because, like,
and I don't think in the movie, and I'm just going to jump in here, in the movie, and I'll say right now, I liked it. And yeah. I'm on the side that it's a good concept. It's a good movie, but I'm not quite sure if it's a good Constantine movie.
Yeah, because it doesn't fit that rendition of Constantine that we're all used to.
There's aspects of it that really work for me. I feel like Keanu's portrayal as Constantine worked just fine. The director had a basic understanding. He probably read maybe 12 issues. Maybe. He had an understanding of who he is and how he emotes, but I don't think he understood the embodiment of the work of Hellblazer up to that point. And that is very much made clear in the material he used for this movie. Number one, he clung mostly to the Christian side of things, which again, yes, that is not Constantine. It is not solely based in Judeo-Christian mysticism.
But it is part of it, though.
It is part of it. But, and I understand in what, mid-2000s, you need to isolate and pinpoint your specific motif for a film that you can market to the masses. Most people at that time understand Christianity. They understand heaven. They understand hell. And you got to remember, we're marketing to idiots. These idiots are the ones that go to the movie theaters, including myself. Okay. Please don't push stop and unsubscribe. But for the most part, the masses like popcorn films. So you have to zero in on an aspect that you can market. If you were to mm-hmm. throw in all the different things that make up Hellblazer, people's heads would spin and they'd be confused. Like, they'd okay, confused. I don't get the mythology. What's this about? Is it about, you know, Judeo-Christianity? Is it about Hinduism? Is it about this? Is it about that? So I understand that aspect.
So at the end of the day, you have to actually look at the movie as a standalone.
Right.
Almost kind of like how you look at like an Elseworlds title or a Black Label. It's an Elseworlds storyline.
Yeah.
As long as it gets the concept of Constantine and the one time in the movie that made me believe, okay, this is a adequate Constantine film, was when he made the deal with the devil in the end.
That was one of my
favorite
parts.
Because that was the most awesome thing, because I'm going, yes,
I think everything
would do that.
Everything about that ending to me worked.
Everything for me worked.
Everything about that ending worked. I mean, even the moment where he's like, you know, flipping him off as he's floating to heaven. I'm like, fuck, that's awesome. That's John Constantine to a T.
So do you want to know an interesting fact about the film?
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that Nicolas Cage was originally slated to be Constantine.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, man. That would have been weird.
Was Nicolas Cage like,
Hold on, I've got to steal this relic.
Was Nicolas Cage in the mid-2000s on a kick to just be thrown into some superhero movie? Because he was allegedly attached to countless superhero movies.
I think he was just trying to get his dick wet in anything he could that was a comic book film.
But dude, have you ever seen the interview of Nicolas Cage talking about his dreams of always being in a superhero film? He'll do anything to be in a superhero film.
Oh, how about you go back to being 90s Nick Cage and be a good actor? How about you do that?
I'm pretty sure puberty. I'm pretty sure that current Nick Cage like did a swing around. He did Mandy, which was supposed to be incredible. I'll be watching soon.
Mandy was fucking Mandy amazing.
Mandy was amazing. He did something right after Mandy that was supposed to be really good too.
Sandy.
Probably.
It's the follow up.
It was fun.
So, Greg.
Yes.
Briefly, because we went way too long on the movie. Constantine, the movie. Where do you stand on it?
I liked it. I liked that it had a pop of midnight in it. I thought that was fucking awesome.
Yeah. That's it?
Yeah. I mean, for that when it came out, because that's when I was in the midst of reading everything. Mm-hmm. I was like, they pulled some stuff from Dangerous Habits and even like Original Sin storylines. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, this isn't the con scene that I know, but I also kind of look at it as like, okay, they're trying to get regular dumb shit people to go see this.
It worked as a movie.
Yeah.
It was, so, in my opinion, it was a successful movie.
I mean, I liked that they had Puppet Midnight. I also like some of the relics that they had, like, you know, the chair from, like, what was it, Chino? Like, oh, like, yeah. The chair from the Chino. Chair.
Yeah.
And he's like, over 13,000 souls died in this chair. You might be next, John. Yeah. That's not how he sounded, but I made him, you know, Cuban or whatever.
There were great moments in that movie. I mean, the way the movie opened, I loved it. How he exercised the demon through the mirror. It was a great way to start the movie. So I'm not torn about it. I will say I enjoyed it. I did. Go ahead, Paul.
I loved it when I saw it in theaters in 2005.
You know, I haven't watched it in about 6 years, so I might end up thinking it sucks. Is that what you're trying to say, Paul?
No, I have no idea. Like, I legitimately
not hold up.
When I saw that movie, I was unaware of Constantine, the comic book character.
Oh, okay.
And I was just like, oh, this is a movie. I think I fucking went with my mom. No, I definitely did, because it was
Hey, mom, let's go see this movie. It's gotta be great.
It was R.
It's got Jesus in it.
So
it has that cute guy Shia LaBeouf. Come on.
What?
Shia LaBeouf's in it. He's Chaz.
Is he?
He's Chaz.
Yeah, he's the taxi driver.
That tracks. Do you think they tried to dye Keanu Reeves or bleach Keanu Reeves' hair and it just didn't take? I've never seen him without jet black hair.
I think Keanu Reeves is Keanu Reeves. And he was like, wait, you want to do what to my hair?
You can try. It won't take.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the best and greatest news that has surfaced within just the last week. And this should pacify many of the Hellblazer fanboys out there. I know it pacifies me. Hellblazer rejoins Sandman universe with new ongoing title. That's right. John Constantine will join DC's Sandman universe titles, first with a one-shot, then an ongoing series. On October 30th, the Sandman universe presents Hellblazer number 1 by writer Simon Spurrier and artist Marcio Takara.
Oh, shit. Really?
Are you being serious?
Yeah, no.
Oh,
I did.
I was like, wait, what?
I did not know that Marcio Takara.
It's Marcio Takara. So you're into him.
Yeah.
What does he do?
I mean, a lot of shit on Instagram. Why did I start following him?
We'll get into it in a second. Hold on.
Yeah, go on.
So Simon Spurrier and artist Marcio Takara will induct the character into the Neil Gaiman curated group of titles, followed afterward by a John Constantine Hellblazer ongoing by Spurrier and artist Aaron Campbell beginning in November. Year one was just the start. According to this quote here, now you get to inhabit the worlds, books, and houses we built for you, says Gaiman. I was thrilled when I was told that John Constantine, the original demon haunted one who first showed up in Swamp Thing's American Gothic story is coming back to his murky and dangerous roots. More magic and more darkness and not a few gods and dreams are here for you to explore. Okay, this is just absolutely fantastic. It's going to be picking up from a story element in the original 1990 Books of Magic limited series co-written by Gaiman himself. The Sandman universe presents Hellblazer number 1 begins as John Constantine finds himself haggard, bloody, and dying in an epic magical war. Okay, now, I did not see this coming at all because we had the whole Justice League Dark thing running. Even with the recent Hellblazer title coming to an end, I did not see this coming. Now, I was aware that Gaiman was working on this whole new imprint.
Yeah, it was his quote-unquote Sandman universe.
Yeah, working on his own little string of titles, his own universe, the Sandman universe. Yes, was aware of that. I wasn't aware that he was building it up so that he can reintroduce Constantine right back in.
Especially with the recent news that, like, all of Vertigo is just, like, shut down. So yeah. Just everything is under the DC imprint, which is fine. You know, whatever. They use their mature or teen or young adult or right. Whatever. They can use those for things. But it's just,
I did not expect to immediately see this formerly Vertigo universe immediately expand right after they kill off Vertigo.
Yeah.
Well, the thing was, like, with Gaiman now carries a lot of power, I noticed, because, like, the last couple months, he has really jumped back into comic books, and he jumped back in with Sandman, and everyone made a big deal, and it sold well. So everyone
did very well.
Everyone was like saying, well, DC turned around and said, okay, if we give him pretty much a blank check and say, you could do whatever you want, do whatever stories you want. You could take the Sandman universe back, do anything you want and let him go. And that's why, like, I was surprised Gaiman was going to bring in Constantine, because Constantine has never been. Yeah, Constantine's been in the Sandman universe, but not under Gaiman's run. Like
Gaiman's control.
Control.
Yeah.
So I was like really going, wait a minute, Constantine's never been Gaiman's writing.
And speaking of the older stuff that I never read, has Constantine ever like directly interacted with, say, the Sandman or Lucifer or some of those big Sandman universe characters?
Oh man, yes and no.
Yes and no, because yeah, like
from what I remember,
because the way that it's always been, Sandman is kind of like the place where no one wants to deal. Like any heroes that go there never come back. Like they've had heroes go there and they've died. That's how in the past they got rid of some past superhero characters. They said, okay, send him off to Gaiman.
All right. So just to give some background on the Sandman universe, there may be supernatural. There may be Constantine fans out there who aren't completely up to speed. Now, the Sandman universe is a line of comic books published by DC Comics under its DC Vertigo imprint. The line was started to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, mm-hmm. the 1989 through 1996 run, and Vertigo's 25th anniversary. The Sandman universe features a one-shot and four new ongoing series, House of Whispers, Lucifer, The Books of Magic, and The Dreaming. And each comic is overseen by Gaiman, but written by different creative teams.
Yeah, because
so this is Gaiman's world, man.
It's Gaiman's world. And the thing that cracks me up is
are you guys Gaiman fans?
Yes, oh, or no? I am. Oh, okay. By far. And yeah. The thing that makes me crack up is this is a character
that
was
out here now, Paul. I heard that.
This was
a character that was a soft yeah, not a but keep going.
But this was a character that was created by Alan Moore. Not Neil Gaiman. And I'm like, going,
yeah, but Neil Gaiman knows the supernatural and the fantastical very well.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Well, because you're taking us there, Negative Nancy. So let's just do it.
I just don't know.
Expectations.
God, it's like I'm back in the fucking comic book store.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Expectations, YouTube comment, David. Go ahead.
Okay. My expectations for this, I'm really interested where Gaiman's going to go, because of all the characters that I remember of that Gaiman has taken under,
mm-hmm.
no one's like Constantine. Constantine is pretty much, if you know who Alan Moore is, he was the embodiment of Alan Moore.
Right.
And
are you referring right now to like characters' relationships with Constantine, or what? Who
the type of character that Constantine is?
Mm-hmm.
Gaiman's never done someone like that.
So you're saying that his archetype,
his personality
is not in Gaiman. You don't feel like it's in Gaiman's wheelhouse.
In Gaiman's wheelhouse. That's why my expectations for this, I'm really excited to see it, because this is something that I don't think I've ever seen Gaiman do.
Okay, I can see now that there's some clarification, I can see where you're going with this discussion. Okay.
What is Gaiman's actual role in this, though? Is he
he's just creative oversight.
Yes.
It's right. His world. These are his titles that DC has given him to do. Like, this is your world.
The writer
was
going to be pitching things to him, and then he's like, yes or
that's
no.
How it works.
And then that happens.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Like Gaiman and Moore, I mean, they In all retrospect, they are kind of not exactly the same, but like they were
polar opposites of each other.
They're
when
polar
you
opposites,
read.
But they do that shit really well. That dark, brooding like shit really well.
Yeah.
Moore's is just more on the, you know, there's a little bit more violence and rape.
Yeah, but... and basically the world is shit.
Well, yeah, because Moore thinks the world is shit. The
world. Well, I'm looking at this as a positive. Number one, you're bringing Hellblazer back to where, in my opinion, it was its best, Vertigo. And I know that's just a name. It's just an imprint. It doesn't mean suddenly you're going to have amazing writing. But we're also dealing with Neil Gaiman. And yes, this may not be in his usual repertoire of archetypes, but he is a fantastic creative leader. He's done this before with other titles. He knows what works and what doesn't in stories. And as long as he can bring on the right writers that he feels understands the character and can really get the best out of it, then I think we're in good hands. I think we're okay. Now,
speaking of Simon Spurrier, I was fucking jazzed. Like, my reaction to Takara, it was like nothing compared to when I found out that Simon Spurrier was going to be writing this series.
Give me some background on him. I'm not completely up to speed with his title. So what has he worked on?
So the only things that I have read by him were he's got three titles with Boom Studios. One is The Spire, one is Weavers, and one is Coda. Coda being the most recent. So just his whole writing style, and we'll see if it like translates into these now DC books, but he like specifically when he's writing a character, one, he's an English dude. So they're always like written to be speaking with an English accent. Mm-hmm. But two, just the way he, well, and granted, so that's the letter or two, but, like words will like literally the ink will fade and it'll become like lighter and letters will become smaller as they trail off while they're talking. So just that alone, a lot of his characters,
pretty cool creative flair as well.
Yeah. And a lot of his characters immediately you read their personality.
Okay.
So that's super cool. But specifically Coda is what I had just finished reading when I like literally just finished reading when I found out that he was going to be taking over Hellblazer. So Coda is about, it's kind of like post-apocalyptic, a very fantasy world, but everything is, you know, shit and post-apocalyptic. All magic is drawn from the blood of elves. And so they, anyway, the main character is trying to control something that he can't reasonably control because it's another person. And he doesn't realize what he's trying to do is wrong while being an entirely self-loathing character. It's perfect. So
most importantly, he can craft a story, in your opinion. Okay. Yeah, I'm keeping the faith and I have high hopes for this. I have recently purchased the Sandman Universe titles. Each of their volumes came out. House of Whispers is out now. Lucifer is out. The Books of Magic and The Dreaming. I planned on reading The Dreaming at some point, but when they announced that Constantine was being taken right back into Vertigo as part of this universe, I went out to Barnes & Noble immediately and purchased every volume they had there so that I can do my due diligence and understand the universe that Constantine will be strutting through now. And I recommend you guys to do the same. Greg, expectations about this Sandman universe. You seem to be a little more positive than David.
Well, yeah, because I'm not a complete git and fucking smeghead. So, no, I think it's going to be great. I think one thing I liked about these characters, especially was something they were off of the norm. They weren't your typical, superhero. They didn't, you know, and, you know, Constantine wasn't, he dealt with all the supernatural and the mysticism and, you know, in Marvel, you've got, you know, Doctor Strange and I mean, that's cool and all, but I mean, you're never going to see, you know, Doctor Strange sitting there lighting up a cigarette going, ah, fuck, not again, you know? So I'm really excited for it. And to really kind of kick Dave in the nuts, Alan Moore wasn't the only writer of Constantine, you dumb fuck. So,
wow. Very aggressive, very aggressive.
So I think it's going to be well, especially with Gaiman overseeing everything, because in any of his novels, he's a great storyteller. So,
yeah. And I think that's what it comes down to. And if you look at all the Hellblazer runs, they've all been done by very different writers. So it looks like a lot of us are disagreeing with David on this one.
Greg is so mad at David. He's had two middle fingers up for
I'm used to it.
Just bringing the audience into it.
Jamie Delano and Garth Ennis, Paul Jenkins, Warren Ellis, Brian Azzarello. These are all good writers, all very different. Yes, they veer heavily into the more mature and sometimes graphic, but that doesn't mean they're similar. They all delve into very different things. They all have their go-tos. And I'm willing to give Gaiman a shot here. I mean, you look at some of the greats here, Warren Ellis, Brian Azzarello, these people, Garth Ennis, Gaiman, he fits right in.
I mean, Ennis did Preacher, so I mean.
Yeah.
You know,
so I feel like he is an appropriate name to be in charge. Maybe not write a complete run, although I'm willing to give it a shot as well. But creative leader, I'm okay with that. All right, so let's move on to some more depressing news. Let's balance this discussion out with some bad and disappointing news. DC Universe's Swamp Thing would have led to a Justice League Dark spinoff had the DC Universe production house not been a bunch of yahoos.
Yeah. God damn it.
First off, the cancellation of Swamp Thing, and we've gone on and on about this in other DC shows that we do. It was just an unjustified catastrophe.
It's a punch in the nuts for fans.
It really is. The sad thing about this is that the Swamp Thing showrunner, there may be people out there, Dave, that may not be familiar or in the know, but Mark Verheiden, the showrunner for Swamp Thing, was also the showrunner for the short-lived single-season Constantine show on NBC.
Which was fantastic.
God, that was fucking amazing.
It was such a good TV show. And when they announced that Mark Verheiden would be tackling Swamp Thing almost a year and a half ago, I literally leaped with joy. I was like, what the fuck? This is awesome. Because the first thing I thought of is, A, I love Swamp Thing.
Yep.
And B, I was like, all right, I see a doorway for Constantine to slide right back in, you know, especially with Mark Verheiden being in control of it. It made perfect sense. It was a no-brainer.
Oh, and if you've been watching the Swamp Thing series, which I encourage everyone out there.
Fucking great.
Watch it. It's worth it. But if you see all the little Easter eggs they left out, especially in a couple of the last episodes, you see that basically where he was heading, which was Justice League Dark.
Yeah.
Especially with like the Easter egg to John Constantine in it.
Can you imagine?
It was amazing.
I'm hoping DC kind of gets their head out of their ass with that and brings it back. Cause
well, isn't that like the most disgusting thing? They said there's been really good fan feedback with Swamp Thing. So they will look into bringing it to like a movie with a completely different cast and all the other shit because this is good right now.
Stupid. Why? Like, fan feedback is great. So let's give them a movie. But hold on. Let's
change everything.
Listen to this, Bobby. Great idea. We're not going to have the showrunner come back to help make the movie. We're going to get a totally different guy. This guy wrote some really shitty films. Like he did the Biker Boys movie, but he's got a great idea. And we'll get a whole different cast. You know what? Let's set it in Antarctica. Okay. Just listen to me. There's no swamps up there, but then a swamp appears. See? Swamp Thing moves with a swamp.
You're depressing me because I can actually see that conversation happening in some, you know.
Well, if I say it, then that'll push the universe to actually make a legit and, you know, quality thing.
Yeah, so. It's depressing.
It is.
I mean,
it's one of those sword points of the entire series is as you watch Swamp Thing, it's amazing to see this series and what they're able to do with it.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like with Constantine, like when you found out that Constantine wasn't going to come back, you're just like, well, fuck me. Like,
guess I'll just kill myself.
No, I literally almost did because they didn't even tell us it got canceled. They said, hey, guys, we'll be back after winter break with another 9 episodes.
And then nothing.
They didn't even come back. And I was waiting for 4 months. Finally, I decided to do a search on the internet. I was like, when is this fucking show coming back?
Well, I was following
Constantine has been canceled.
I followed Matt Ryan on Twitter. And then he had a tweet that said, you know, retweet, save Constantine. And I was just like, And I tweeted and I said, I like tagged DC and Matt Ryan. And I was like, can you please bring back Constantine? It's the only decent fucking show you guys have been putting out. And Matt Ryan is Constantine. And then I fanboyed because then he liked it and retweeted it.
Yeah.
Well,
next thing we know, years later, he was on Legends. So yeah. Great job. You did it.
Just to reiterate how wrong Warner Brothers has always done these characters.
Warner Brothers has their head shoved so far up their ass.
There was an interview that actually a Warner Brothers exec basically said, well, these characters don't fit the DC profile.
Oh, go to hell.
DC characters don't.
Yeah. And I remember reading that and a lot of people were like going, what is Warner Brothers thinking? Because you mean to tell me that a character that is under your imprint doesn't fit your portfolio?
I just wonder if they feel like that, you know, he's not like they can't market it to kids or whatever.
That's what was in the article.
That's stupid because like Marvel's kind of got the idea that, look, we can do stuff for kids and we can do stuff for their parents and shit and we'll make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
They've made a shit ton of money.
Problem number one, it was on NBC. That's problem number one. They were marketing this show to regular moms and dads that watch NBC at 7 o'clock live, not DVR live, which I don't think anybody does that unless you're 60 years old.
Yeah.
That's who they were marketing to.
That's
why the show didn't connect as fast as it could have, because by episode 8, 9, I remember there was a lot more enthusiasm. People started finding the show. There was just so many mistakes that were made with the show. I know some people pointed to the procedural element of the show saying, well, it's too much of a procedural. But if you're on NBC, I have two reasons or two justifications. If you're on NBC, that's what works. Procedurals. That's what people are accustomed to watching. The non-serialized type of show that goes and tackles a new case every week. But they kind of did the best of both worlds with Constantine. I feel like that was Mark Verheyen understanding the television business and understanding his audiences as well as understanding Constantine. He turned it into a bit of a procedural, which the comic book is a bit of a procedural. It's John Constantine solving a case.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what it is. And then there's that overarching myth arc that is the ongoing story. And that's what the TV show accomplished. So who knows why DC and NBC and Warner Brothers makes the decisions they do when it comes to Swamp Thing. No one will ever know the truth behind that cancellation. I guess they said it has to do with tax paperwork not being filed and they lost over half the budget for the season because of non-redeemable tax incentives.
Which is understandable because, like, I know in other shows, Mike, we've discussed that basically a loss like that is catastrophic.
Well, they lost $40 million, allegedly.
They lost $40
million. $40 million based on an $80 million season.
And that is catastrophic.
Yes. So, but as Paul said, the best thing to come from this catastrophe of a cancellation of the Constantine NBC show was Matt Ryan as Constantine, which in my opinion is an amazing Constantine. And just like Greg said, he used that hashtag, Matt Ryan is Constantine. I agree 100%. And although I'm happy we're keeping Matt Ryan on the hook by bringing him into the so-called CW verse / Arrowverse,
also on, voicing the animated stuff.
Yep. On Legends of Tomorrow, as well as the City of Demons cartoon, episodic cartoon they had on CW Seed. I feel like it's wasting Ryan's talents. Not the animation was great. City of Demons was fantastic. But Legends of Tomorrow, I feel like it's wasting Ryan's talents and portrayal as Constantine. I feel like his story deserves more than that silly, substanceless TV series that everybody loves. There's critics. It's critically appraised, Legends of Tomorrow, based on the last 2 years. The first 2 years, a lot of people didn't like it. Suddenly, they threw out all relevance and any semblance of a story, and they just did one. They just do one silly thing after another, and now people love the show, and they think it's one of the best superhero shows of all time. And listen, I find myself laughing and smiling. I actually enjoy the show, which I want to slip my wrist after I admit that. I actually do enjoy the show, but it's not where Constantine belongs. He doesn't belong. Yes, he does not belong on a slapstick, substanceless show. That's not where you put a character like Constantine. There's so much you can do with him, and yet he's kind of been marginalized down to a punchline at times in the episode. And I'm not going to complain, because as Paul said, I'm not going to complain, even though I complained for about a good 60 to 90 seconds. But we did get Matt Ryan.
Yeah, he's there. We got him.
Yes. And by putting him in Legends of Tomorrow, it's not letting him go to another series where he could get locked up for 3, 4, 5 years. And then if an opportunity opened down the road, we're shit out of luck, because Matt Ryan is on some Netflix original now for the next 3 or 4 years. So that being said, I am glad they have him using that carrot. Hey, Matt Ryan, follow the carrot. Go get it.
Go get it.
Here's another season for you, Matt Ryan. Go get it. And then hopefully at the end of this next season, because he is returning, Matt Ryan will be reprising his role as John Constantine in the upcoming season of Legends of Tomorrow. I'm hoping that will be a nice little bookmark that we can then open that doorway to possibly getting another series of some kind with Matt Ryan. But as Paul mentioned, we did get the City of Demons, the Justice League Dark animated movie as well, where Matt Ryan lends his vocal talents. I love it. It just brings a level of consistency having Matt Ryan continue his work in different iterations of Hellblazer / John Constantine media. And with that, there's one big news that pertains to all of this. Just this past weekend at San Diego Comic-Con, they announced yet another project. Justice League Dark, the animated movie that came out in 2017, is getting a sequel titled Apocalypse War. That's all we know so far. We don't even know.
But how's Apocalypse spelled?
Apocalypse.
It's spelled like the planet Darkseid is from.
Apocalypse, right. And that's the takeaway right there. This is going to be fucking fantastic. I don't know if Matt Ryan's John Constantine will be involved. I can only imagine he would be.
That's confirmed.
It is officially confirmed.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Oh, are you sure?
Jesus.
Okay, because the articles I brought up were saying they weren't sure who the cast is going to be yet. So that's good to know. Because that was the only thing I was worried about. I'm like, where is Matt Ryan and where is John Constantine? But it would make sense. When you think Justice League Dark at this point, what do you think? You think John Constantine. You can't really have
Constantine, Dead Man Zatanna, and that's pretty much it for the animated.
Right. But, and I know they have that new title going on that's written by James Tynion.
Yeah.
And it's pretty damn fucking good. I actually feel like it's much better than the initial New 52 Justice League Dark launch. But there's not enough John Constantine in it.
Yeah.
That's my only complaint. So if it's Justice League Dark, in my opinion, you have to have Constantine there. All right, so this concludes our very first House of Mystery broadcast. Remember, shows will be available twice a month with a planned release day of every other Sunday. It will rotate with the release of our Batman fan show, Wayne Talk, hosted by Paul. Hello, Paul.
What a cool show.
Yeah. And you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. But you can also get this show on our main DC on RMD feed, where you'll find all of our DC-themed discussions with Rain Man Digital's entire stable of hosts. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Hey, thank you.
And good night.
My name is John Constantine. I'm the one who steps from the shadows, all trench coat and arrogance. I'll drive your demons away, kick them in the bollocks, and spit on them when they're down, leaving only a nod and a wink and a wisecrack. I walk my path alone, because let's be honest, who'd be crazy enough to walk it with me?